This episode is sponsored by Cards Against Humanity. They asked us not to read an ad. Enjoy!
It is a Chicagoverse podcast on the Dynasty Podcast Network, featuring interviews with Chicago's premier artists and industry, and creatives and culture leaders. Hosted by Haima Black. Welcome to Chicago.
So in terms of like how it's going to be heard, are they going to be broken up? Or are they going to be together? Like, are we in direct conversation with his?
Like, if we talk about stuff he says?
Yeah, you can talk about it. I mean, okay. The interviews are going to go up back to back.
Okay.
So it's like, we're going
to
start it here.
Like a different day.
Yeah, no. I like it to feel like it's one thing. Like, cool. I grew up reading comics, and like, if I'm reading Batman 492 and they're like, oh, check out Batman 491 for what happened that he's talking about, like, I'm like, oh, cool, I know that. So, yeah, if you guys mentioned like the Mello interview, right, somebody can go back and listen to the previous episode and check out Mello. So there we go, man. But kicking it off, sitting here now for the second interview of the night with the Ergo Radio team. Thank you guys for coming up. We have Damon Williams and Danielle Kisslinger.
You got it.
There we go.
Man, I've known him for like, 7 years now? I just figured out how to say his last name. Like last.
Dude, I get it. Like,
May.
I stopped correcting people when one time they asked me the right way to pronounce it and I pronounced it wrong. From then I was like, whatever you can come up with.
It's like that great Zach Galifianakis bit where he's like, my name is Zach Galifianakis. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. That's awesome, man. Thank you guys both for coming up, though, tonight.
Happy
I really appreciate
here.
It.
Thank you
to be here.
Us.
Thank you for doing this, man. Happy to be here. Following up after the homie Mello.
Absolutely.
I am the biggest Pivot advocate.
Yeah.
I'm trying to, like, sneak my way into the team. I don't know the handshake or nothing. I don't put in enough
sneak
work.
Sneak into the promo pick.
Yeah, I don't do enough work to, like, actually be certified.
Yeah,
but it's in my spirit.
You're like that kid on photo day who just sticks around for all the like student group pictures.
Yeah,
all the clubs.
I talk about Pivot way more than I talk about Ergo.
Right. You're like, I'm in Boy Scouts, I'm in yearbook, I'm in like choir, I'm in drama club.
And
yeah.
I'm in Pivot.
Exactly. Yeah. Right on. So, so we had been in communication, you guys and myself, for a couple weeks now because you guys celebrated your 100th episode, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. But like, we wanted to set up an interview with you guys on this channel and then myself on your program.
It's kind of like when like the Harlem Globetrotters go to like
Scooby-Doo. Right,
like
exactly.
Which are we? Are we Scooby-Doo or the
Globetrotters? We are definitely the Globetrotters. I'm not trying to...
Am I the Generals? Is that
no, you could be a Globetrotter.
So
we
like,
won't make it problematic.
I had a couple Sundays that were already booked and then like you guys weren't available for the Sundays that I had open and then like I was going to come on your program and then like that date didn't work. So like we've been playing this like back and forth email tag for a minute, but we're finally, I think, making...
So
you guys are here and I'm going to be on the program.
Yeah, a couple weeks.
I think... October 19th?
19th sounds about right. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Shout out to the associate producer, Lola.
Yeah, Lola made that happen.
Ergo squad, who's been working very hard on that. So shout out to her. I'm excited to have you on. We should just talk about what we're going to talk about then now.
Right. So, you know, I'm really interested in, like, digging into your guys' story, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, again, let's start at the beginning. Like, how did this let's start with this first. Talk about what Ergo is, and then we'll get some backstory on how you got involved.
Sure.
Go ahead, man.
Ergo is a radio show and podcast here in Chicago featuring live long-form interviews with artists, organizers, musicians, rappers, singers, creators, folks reshaping the culture of Chicago and our country for the more equitable and the more creative.
Damn.
That's the, that's the pitch line.
You got the bylaws.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
There we go. Okay.
All right.
Hello.
I'll stop playing with my curls. I'm really excited.
We can go like full like slumber party. And it's like, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm twirling on here. I'm not
calling boys.
I haven't had curls since I was like three. I'm like really having fun.
Absolutely adorable.
But we've been doing this show for a little over 2 years now. Mm-hmm. And each week we sit down and talk with someone else from our city who's making things that we feel like are kind of in the midst of what, you know, when we started the show and for a while has been branded or thought about as this renaissance in the city where some of the most like meaningful and beautiful and innovative art is being made at the same time that some of the more sustainable and radical social movement building is happening in the country. And very often those are the same people doing both.
Right.
And so the goal from jump was to get the folks doing that work in a space where they could tell their own stories. And both for this moment, for someone who's going, man, I keep hearing about Chicago, whether it's, you know, a positive thing or a negative thing, and I don't know where to start.
Right.
Here's an opportunity for folks to tell it in their own words. And then also as kind of like a first-person primary documents for people in the future trying to understand this moment in the city.
Right, absolutely. So let's get the backstory now that we've got the rundown. And those are like the the official bylaws version.
He's got it down to
it. Yeah. So let's get some background from each of you. Like, how did the creative work? Because I was reading your bios on the website, and there's a lot to cover there. But, like, kind of how did creative work start for you? And then also let's talk about how broadcast work started for you, because it sounds like for both of you, Ergo was not the first broadcast project that either of you did. So bring us into whoever wants to start kind of your backstory and your background.
I grew up. This is what he does, though. He always messes with the mic. I'm born and raised in Chicago from the South Side. I grew up doing different performances that I acted. I also did a lot of public speaking. So I'm really passionate about the work of the show because it is connected to like two sides that makes up the whole of me in terms of being an artist and also being someone my whole life, but definitely more on the radical side the last three to 4 years, politically active. And so history around radio and broadcast and why this was cool or comfortable for me is my father's an entertainer and a comedian, so he's been doing radio my whole life. So I used to grow up like going to V103 and WGCI.
Oh, man. And stuff. So, that must have been so cool as a kid, too.
Yeah, and so very early on, like, I had an intimate understanding of radio and broadcast that, like, you don't
and
really
hyper
see
local.
Yeah, yeah.
Radio.
So like I would be able to know what time of the hour it was based on when the commercials were coming on, right?
Yep.
I understood radio.
When the spots came on and absolutely.
And then from there it just was kind of an experience, a part of like a nostalgic part of childhood. Did like a morning announcement radio show in high school. And then really how we started to orbit each other is because we went to the same college. And so I think 3 out of the first 4 semesters I had a late night radio show that I also broadcast on Ustream, so it was also kind of like a live talk show behind the scenes of the music. And Kiss was really passionate about the radio station on our campus and later became the station head. And so, you know, we knew each other from freshman year, but really around like senior year, once he had like some power and some understanding of the institution, we really start to put together some great events that I was able to be a part of as an artist and was able to perform at. And that then began part of our like working relationship, and then he ended up following me here. He doesn't give me enough credit. For relocating this. Nah, I'm joking.
It's a piece.
And then we started seeing each other in the same social setting. So, you know, the artistic community that was, you know, around the hip-hop and the spoken word that has really been, like, the springboard for this renaissance that's been happening the last 5-7 years, and how that was, like, cross-pollinating with, you know, the direct action on the street, you know, resistance movements that were really youth-led or young people-led. And so us seeing each other in that space and him having the passion to keep going, then he put together the concept and had the connections of getting the show going, and we've been running ever since. What did I miss?
Right on.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you pretty much covered it.
All right, that's it.
See you later.
Yeah, thanks for coming out.
No, but I was also doing interviews, as was Damon. We actually, our sophomore year, Kids These Days played on campus, and they were down to do an interview, and Damon interviewed them, and I didn't get to interview them, but I engineered it.
Yeah.
So I often wish I had had that interview or we could have done it together.
Yeah, no,
think
that
about
was,
how cool
that was very
been.
Selfless. You just threw that to me. That was
cool. Well, you knew them.
Yeah, a little bit.
And which college was this?
This is Grinnell College in Iowa.
It's a
tiny liberal arts school in a town of 9,000, 1,600 students.
Yeah.
Not a lot of radio listeners, but a lot of radio time that we put in.
But you were able to cut your teeth there.
Yeah, for sure.
That's
for
remarkable, sure. though, that like you guys were able to like both find each other in Chicago and then kind of like bring those collective experiences that you gained at the college in Iowa and bring that here.
Yeah. And I
think
make
it something here.
And I think it works beyond just the radio, the production piece. We also had kind of similar or parallel academic tracks and just thinking wise and intellectually, we had the same advisor and mentor, who's still a big part of both of our lives. And so, you know, we were kind of, from different positions, thinking about some of the same themes kind of on the content side as well. And we both just are talkers. So
So how did that conversation begin where you guys are like, hey, like we've both obviously done all these things. We know each other. Let's bring it together and make this thing in Chicago.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I love this. Yeah, he hit me up because we had been seeing each other in different spaces. And he was like, you know, I think I got an idea. And the story of my life is like, not really having things figured out, or I'm a disorganized organizer. and so, you know, I kind of do all of these, like, what's the word, like, freelance type things.
Right. Yeah.
And so it was like another thing that sounded really good. And as I have my own, like, as I am very self-critical, wanting to be of value to all the things that I've seen worth happening around me. So, you know, yeah. I am an artist. I am I rap and make poetry, but wasn't feeling myself being able to, like, have a consistent outlet as an individual. I was a part of a group. And so I wanted to be of value to the still, even though I wasn't in the studio, to folks that were making the things and people that I had real love for. And then also how to put what was happening musically, which I think Chicago gets, like, highlighted and forefronted for a lot, in direct contact with what was happening earlier, as, like, the movement for Black Lives or the response after Ferguson was coming about and wasn't really publicized yet. And I felt like I was living history.
Right.
And so for me, it was the point y'all made about, you know, like, the idea of getting on the reader or getting on Fake Shore,
right.
Wanting to have a platform that felt like that for an artist. So even if there's not a lot of fanfare, I wanted to feel like something that was of tangible benefit.
An accomplishment, yeah.
Yeah. And then lastly, it'd be something historical. So whether we're talking to Malcolm London or Rick Wilson or Jamila Woods or, you know, all of the amazing organizers that are in the city, I feel them as somebody who are going to be, like, in the history books, right?
Yeah,
somebody
absolutely.
20, 30 years from now, we're going to still be talking about. So now that we have this tool of this digital age, right, like, to be able to go back.
If we
were able to go back and listen to Rick James at 21 or Huey
right.
Newton, right, and, like, hear them understand and unpack home as they were developing and really coming into their own. So that is my perspective.
Yes.
On how it got
started. So I think that, like, desire to contribute was really big for both of us. So I can't remember if it was before or after. So I've been dying to get back on the radio. I was working at the Promontory in Hyde Park.
Right.
And my boss there is one of the format chiefs on WHBK, which is the community station on the UChicago campus that we broadcast out of. And so after working there for 3 or 4 months and setting up a lot of chairs and then packing those chairs up at the end of the night at 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah, all the glamorous
ones. Oh, yeah. I asked him if I could get on the radio. Basically, I was like, can I pitch you a show? And he said, yeah. So I at that point I wrote up a little something.
It
and
was
I went
good
to Damon.
I had a margin, like a black border
on the one sheet with a picture and a logo. It was a whole thing.
It was very official.
It was in a manila envelope.
Oh my God.
So I went to Damon.
You could have gotten a grant.
Hey, if you didn't know any grants.
Please. Yeah.
But so I went to Damon at that point and I was like, hey, I'd love to, let's sit down. Cause we'd seen each other around, but we hadn't really like sat down. So we went to 90 Miles Cuban Cafe on Armitage. And talked for like 2.5 hours, most of which was not about the radio show.
Right.
It's about what we were reading, about what we were thinking about, just kind of reconnecting. And then at the end, or toward the end, I mentioned the radio show, and Dame said he was down. And we looked over the sheet, and then I pitched it, and they said, as long as you are willing to start in the summer when there are no students, you can keep your slot into the fall. So we started July 2015, and we've been on the radio, with the exception of maybe like 3 weeks, we put out an episode ever since.
I mean, so I know firsthand how, like, impressive that is. That's a lot of work.
I mean, it's no 12 years like you, but you know.
But, you know, I mean, it's still, like, that's significant, you know. So a couple things. A, I'm really impressed that they gave you the slot without being students at University of Chicago. That's cool.
Yeah, so it's a in name.
Like, that's unique.
In name, it's a community station, so about... Right. A third to half of the shows are done by people who are not in any other way affiliated with the university, which is surprising and is especially surprising considering it's UChicago, which doesn't like to give a whole lot of things to people that are not
right.
either staff, faculty, or students. But that's part of what radio does, right? Is that it's this accessible form that if people are willing to open the door to it, literally open the door, like anyone can walk in that room and go on the radio. So,
well, and at its best, it's an equalizer and it's a voice for the community, which you guys are doing.
Yeah, that's the hope. And the station has a pedigree of that, right? So it was the first station in Chicago to ever play hip hop on the radio. Before the commercial stations would play it, there was an engineering student named JP Chill who would go up there and play rap records and get them sent to him from Def Jam in the late 80s and stuff like that. So trying to tap into that. And also, thinking about physically where we're situated, so trying to have multiple entry points. So if someone especially 2.5 years ago, has never heard of a podcast.
Right.
You want to be able to say, hey, we have a radio show. That means something, and vice versa.
That's something they can understand. Yeah, because I know firsthand how hard it is to be like, come on my podcast. And people are like, what does that mean? Yeah. It's a hard sell. Until now, the sell has suddenly gone from being very difficult to people being like, I too have a podcast. But like every single person I talk to every week now is like, well, on my podcast, we're going to blah. And I'm like, wait a minute. When did this happen?
Well, so, this is what has happened.
Nobody's listened to it. We're all just making the ones.
No. But people are definitely listening.
Well, there was a New Yorker cartoon that says, I just feel like there's too much podcasting and not enough pod listening.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, Chicago also, like, I think it's really interesting. The college radio kind of resume of Chicago, it's like there's a lot of impressive stations that have done really important work here. Like, you look at Loyola College Radio, WLUW, and they've always done really great community-driven programming. Triton, WRRG's radio station, has always been like really
in the game than we are.
Dude, I mean, this is my background. Like, I came up with this stuff, and like Triton was always like really cool, like definition of like cool underground college rock. Like, they just really embraced, like, everything about that. And it was just, like, it was exactly what you thought of for, like, college radio. And, like, WZRD, I believe it is, at Northwestern, which I've never done. But, like, they, NUR, NUR. I think they gave the Pumpkins their first radio interview, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, so, it like, served a very important role, right? There was a time, and specifically on the hip-hop end, like, there was a, which is, in many ways, our lens musically, like, there was a period of time where that was like a viable
way to break
pathway to breaking.
And totally.
College radio DJs was, you know, pivotal. So when we interviewed Stretch and Bobbito, who were very influential to our show,
for sure.
And they, you know, Bob remembers sending Def Jam promo vinyls to JP Chill, not as a favor, because that was how Def Jam artists were trying to get on.
Right. Totally. Before the internet, like if you were getting played on college radio, like it's kind of like a blog now. Like, if you were, or maybe a blog 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, if you were on a blog 5 years ago, it wasn't the same as getting put on rotation on the radio. It wasn't the same as, like, getting on a major blog, like maybe Consequence of Sound or on a Spotify playlist. But it still was a look.
Yeah.
And college radio, especially, like, prior to, I don't know. Like, college radio for a long time has been this thing where, like, if you can get on college radio, that's a start.
Yeah.
That's, like, that's the thing you put a, when you don't have a lot else to put on your resume yet.
Yeah. That's what we're trying to do, is give someone the first thing on the resume. You
know? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay, so you have the program. It's Thursdays at noon on 88.5,
and then it's 88.5. Available later that afternoon on SoundCloud and iTunes. And we just
Man, you guys turn those around really quick.
And something else that's exciting now is now we're starting to syndicate on an online platform based out of the UK called Wizard Radio.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so they actually get like live listens in like parts of West Germany and parts of Germany and throughout like Western Europe, so it's cool. We actually are starting to get like a little bit of a global listenership as well.
That's amazing. Really, sorry, I just said "whoa" for anyone listening to this later.
It, was an accident.
It sounded like there was an accident outside, but there wasn't.
That's Green Line train.
I know, that was amazing though. Like that, you guys have this indication, because there's a lot of great networks now that are in the spirit of college radio popping up online that are syndicating, like, you know, people like yourselves who have like a professionally done product, or people who are like maybe kind of amateur or like beginner broadcasters, but they're just passionate.
Amateur professional line.
No. You guys are producing a professional product for sure.
I appreciate that.
But I'm saying, like, there's some people who I see, like, who are like maybe using like a Dash radio or something like that, and they don't have a straight quote unquote radio platform, but they got the online thing, and that's their version of college radio and starting out.
Yeah.
And that's I think that stuff's really cool.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, you know, we're kind of talking about the like the marriage of analog and digital in some way. So there's the like the weight and the like the just check of being on the radio, being on airwaves, that like just
it means something.
But you know, really the core of what we are catering towards is that online listenership,
that on demand,
the stuff that's coming from SoundCloud and iTunes. Definitely is in like that. You know, people hear it on 88.5, but that's definitely where we get the most direct response.
For sure.
And that stuff extends beyond just the show. So, like on SoundCloud, in addition to the podcast, we also have a DJ mix series I do.
Mm-hmm.
And we do these WeGo mixtapes. We compile the live on-air performances into compilation mixtapes. We've done three of those. And those, like, that's a great has been a great discovery tool. So like someone who types in Raven Lynae on SoundCloud, like,
they can
finds
that.
This live performance of Raven Lynae, and again, that's also in like that lineage of like Stretch and Bobbito and these tapes and stuff like
totally,
that.
Totally, absolutely. Yeah. So you know, me being like a broadcast radio podcast kind of geek, like I love this stuff. Like I just want to dig into like these logistics. Like I'm so
all right.
I love that stuff, and I feel like. I don't know, maybe not everybody who interviews you guys might not have that radio, nerd
sure.
tip.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the schedule you're keeping, because you're producing these, like, every single week. Uh-huh. You guys are, if I'm in a guest, you're booking the guests, you're, like, you're showing up live to the actual physical space, and then you're, like, doing, I would imagine, some level of production or editing or something like that, and then putting that out pretty quickly. So, like, bring us into the actual process of this. What are the logistics that go into actually producing an episode week after week after week?
He's the mad scientist over here. So
yeah, so I mean, this is definitely kind of the tangible production. Yeah,
your face.
The tangible production, boing boing with the curls, is definitely like falling on my side. I do other radio stuff in addition to this. So I produce a podcast for the Poetry Foundation and various other things here. So like that side's kind of mine. I'd say we work together to book the guests for about 50-50 with our associate producer. Basically, we reach out to someone. If they say yes, if we do it the way we designed it, we pass that contact to her. Mm-hmm. She gets it on the schedule, gives a reminder, stuff like that. And then, so about 90% of the episodes we record live off the radio.
Right.
And the thing that makes it possible to do it at this pace is we don't really edit the like content of the interview. I'll go in and clean it up. I have a couple like filters that
right.
And then if we played music, I'll like replace the music with the actual song rather than the recording of the song off the radio.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's just, you know, basically by Thursday at 8, the podcast is always up and we go off the air at 1.
Yeah. And part of that consistency, like to not beyond the technical side, is really about the, you know, being immersed into the community.
Right.
So, you know, it's really a miracle, or not a miracle, it's really actually the product of like the model of how we try to approach that, like every week we've been able to have somebody. And a lot of times it's like going through your contacts, you know, the week of, or you know, there's two or three people you got to reach out to. And there was something kind of like you know, run around with our, you know, chicken with the head cut off type of situation, but it was really because we have relationships with these people, and we in our different ways have figured out a way to show up. Which made it easier. I think if we were just like coming from a more like journalistic, removed, objective, you don't know us, but here's this platform.
It's a hard pitch.
It would have been harder to have folks plugged in.
Especially in a major market, right? So, you know, when we were in college and we wanted to interview someone, and I did a lot of interviews with people touring through, that was always through a publicist or, you know, anyone from you know, Mick to Kendrick to Chance to all these folks who came through on tour who I sat down with. But that was always a manager or publicist, because there was nobody else that they were going to be doing interviews with. So they're like, why the hell not?
You're the only,
only game in town.
Right.
In the state.
Right.
Within the cornfield, I'm the only one. But here where, you know, people do, if you're going through the press circuit.
Or just have jobs.
And have somewhere to go at Thursday at noon. Like, this is a tougher.
There's so much.
So, but when it's, you know, hey, I mean, and we have some flexibility. We have a relationship. We're part of a podcast collective called Post Loudness here that has a...
Post Loudness, who work with the Chicago Podcast Co-op.
You got it.
Through Cards Against Humanity. Yeah, I'm so part of the CPC as well.
Oh, cool. So we have access to their studio. We record a couple over there.
Cards, detour, Cards Against Humanity.
No, they're getting it.
They have a gorgeous studio. They had a great studio before. And then
they
fixed it up.
Cards Against Humanity.
That's a lot of games.
The way that, man, people play that game.
Yeah. Shout out Alex Cox at Cards Against Humanity. The work that her and the team have done there is staggering.
It is bag against humanity.
Yeah. Their studio is nicer than some radio stations I've seen.
Free snacks all the time. Man, top notch. Shout out to Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah, so you guys, and I didn't know that you had the Post Loudness connection.
That's
really cool.
So I think that helps a little bit when there's someone who can't be Thursday. Like, we had Joseph Chilliams on a couple weeks ago, and he has a job. Thursdays at noon. So we talked with him on another date and then played it live on the radio off the recording.
Sure.
Which is fun. But, you know, but the turnover on it, and it also helps, like, for both of us, people who do not have, like, the same routine every day.
Mm-hmm.
I think just, like, emotionally and just almost spiritually,
it's like church.
It has been so important for us to have this piece of the routine through, you know, almost two and a half years of like very up in the air, volatile, fast changing times in our lives.
Well, it's to me, like when I always walk away from doing these kind of things, like I feel refreshed, I feel recharged, I feel excited, I feel like very fortunate to get to do this because I, you know, I'm like you guys, like I'm a broadcast geek. I love doing this. So it's like, to me at least, it always feels like I'm like recharging.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when your phone hits that, like you can unplug, like you've charged now versus like, you know, sometimes like a day before I get to this, I'm like, dude, I'm at 3%. Like I got to plug in. So
yeah, I'm always on the low power mode. I'm
right.
Like, I guess in life and on my phone.
It's that little thing where it starts like popping up, like, you know, yeah. Power saver mode. So you guys hit 100 episodes a few weeks
in
back.
July, yeah,
which is, oh man, already in July.
Yeah, no.
That's crazy.
No, it's been a minute.
Yeah.
We're at 110 now.
So that's not... So, like, 100 episodes is a big deal. That's an accomplishment because I think a lot of people...
Start getting syndicated. It's like a Seinfeld, like, reunion.
Oh, yeah, match, absolutely. That's when you hit that mark.
Come on.
But I think a lot of people right now, it's never been easier to start any kind of creative endeavor. There's blogs, there's video, there's SoundCloud, there's everything. It's never been easier to start, but I think a lot of people, no matter what their creative concentration is, if they get 3 weeks in, if they get 2 months in and they're not like bringing in immediate money, if they don't already have a million followers on whatever platform, they just give up because they're like, oh, this should have happened by now.
iTunes is littered with 4-episode podcasts. That's like
and there's so many
thing.
Blogs that have like 6 entries or like 2 months worth of. So like 100 episodes, 2 years in, that's an accomplishment that this is still going.
Yeah. I think to the point of like expectations, I think it's because we had very set. That's what part what we were for. We had very set, very crisp goals and expectation objectives that we want this to be. Neither one of us really cared too much about money, at least in relationship to this work.
Right.
So it was, you know, if we were looking to monetize it, it probably would be a little bit more frustrating. But we created a bar that we were able to reach, and then having that blend of actually being on the radio. So there is a slot that we're responsible for. Like even if
right,
we did
you
got
to show up.
Yeah, and so having that type of consistency or that type of structure laid out for us has been, I think, the driving force to our consistency.
It keeps you accountable.
Yeah.
Like you know you got to show up at this time because that's you.
Yeah. That being said, I do think we're at an interesting moment right now with it, of just figuring out whether it's formally with the show or just creatively as a partnership, like where we want to be moving and thinking about what are the next steps?
We've reached our goal. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we had a moment right around the 100th going into, we're doing an interview with someone and Damon goes, yeah, we never talked about how this was going to end.
Right.
You know, we had a goal, we had a whole plan, and we never talked about the end. So, you know, we still don't. Yeah.
But I mean, if you had to just, you know, just throwing it out there, like, where would you like to see the platform go? Where would you like to see the medium or your message or your content or your conversation go?
I mean, I think one thing that we talk about the most is figuring out how to get it into written form. So whether it's transcription or analysis, right? Like,
right.
Because part of creating the historical archive of this time is not only for like a few decades from now, but all of these voices are in conversation with each other. And we developed somewhat of a theory of like some common threads of questions that people from a lot of different perspectives and experiences are like answering a lot of the same concepts or in dialogue
with
the same
themes,
with the same concepts.
Yeah, there's that thorough line, there's that continuity.
So I would love to see, I mean, we could be, you know, more proactive and just do it ourselves, but I think it would be cool for a third party to kind of take all the work and take it as like an original text to then make a claim about what has been happening with these, you know, young, powerful voices that we've been censoring. And then I think something that is less comfortable or we have not figured out as much is the possibility of some type of visual video impact, whether it's shorts or, you know, I don't think we want to like live record the entire episode or stream it to kind of keep some of the concentration around audio.
Sure.
But figuring out how to maybe go to that like next dimension of engaging people's brains. Because even I myself struggle to listen to things without a visual.
Oh, yeah, Damon's never listened to a podcast, ours or otherwise.
I didn't want to say it on someone else's podcast, but I didn't want to. I could sound like I'm dissing the four.
No, but you know, like, it's some people are really visual. Yeah, some people are really visually driven. Yeah. Like I've always been like an audio guy. Yeah. And like even doing this live stream that people are watching, I do this because it reaches an audience. It's a good tool. It's a good promotional thing. But like, I am not that guy who wants to be like visual. Like I grew up listening to radio. I grew up working in radio. I wanted to be in the audio arts, you know? Yeah. So, like, this is a secondary thing that, like, I've got nothing wrong with it. Yeah. And, yeah, I know it helps, but it's, like, I never was, like, I want to be the host of a live stream. You know, like, that was never my, like, first goal with any of this.
Well, that's good because they didn't have live streams then, probably. So.
Yeah, and it's like we started live streaming like 5 years ago, and it was even that was like so rudimentary versus what it is now.
On some Ustream shit. But I mean,
yeah, we were using Ustream.
I think the other piece of what at least I'm trying to figure out how to do, and it's something that Damon actually has more experience in than me in than I do, is taking these skills and doing them beyond just our show, doing them live. So like doing live like Q&As and interviews. So like when speakers come to town, whether it's a Humanities Festival or, you know, other kind of thinker conversations. Because those end up, the interview pieces of those end up being really, really bad because it's someone who either was involved in bringing them there or it's someone who's a writer in their own regard and not an interviewer. And I think that that's a very fertile ground.
And interviewing is a skill. Not everybody realizes that, but interviewing is absolutely a skill.
Yeah, no, and there's theory behind it. And if you want to learn that, you got to book us to come to your college, and we do those as
there
well.
There you go.
I'm just getting all the plugs in.
No, do it, do it.
Which has been actually something, you know, it's been really something that I think has taken our intentionality of the work to the next level is the fact that, and again, like I credit, you know, Daniel with a lot of like, the brain birthing of the way that we're working, because being able to take it to live components, because it started with us doing like these live events at the Silver Room, just more of like a promotional marketing and just like a celebration of community thing, but then to like more commodify or package the work that we're doing and to be able to bring folks with us and be able to put resources in some of our guest pockets.
So folks like also a Kenya, Rick Wilson, we got a gig coming up with Tasha and David Ellis and then another one with the Kenya. So whenever we go, if there's the bread to, we go to a college, we do a workshop. We also bring an artist we've had on the show with us to perform.
That's so cool.
So it's really cool because we get to not only talk about conversation as a political art and bring in the theory and like some of the technique that we're using to have some really exciting conversations, but also being able to talk about what's going on in the world, right? Because this show did not come out of a vacuum, right?
It's a response.
Yeah, it came from it's a response
and a contribution
and proactivity, right?
Right.
It's responsive and proactive. And so it came from you know, political movement building and resistance, and you know, as we are like kind of dancing around just the turmoil or the tumultuous climate we're in globally right now, you know, we are fortunate to have some skills and some experience to be able to impart or be able to give some guidance or at least some structure to how to compute and how to think about things in a more radically imaginative way, especially on college campuses where there's always this like group of 10 to 15 people who just hate,
really like, progressive,
just
who
hate
are like
everybody that's going on, everybody's on that level, and they in the end, you know, it could be a small room, but it really has you could see the value it has for students. And I think it makes us take what we do on air a little bit more seriously.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. When you see the effect it actually has on the community and on younger minds, absolutely, man. That's so meaningful, and it means so much. Right on. So Thursday's at noon. Give me the station.
Sure. WHBK 88.5. It's also 88.5. ErgoRadio.com, AIRGO Radio, and at Ergo Radio on everything.
SoundCloud, iTunes, all those.
The whole situation. On October 20th, we're doing a free gig at Loyola, University of Chicago.
Nice.
It's a live interview and concert with David Ellis, who's a really great rapper, and Tasha, who is a beautiful, wonderful singer. If you happen to be in the D.C. area, we'll be at Georgetown with the Kenya on the 21st. Or we also keep an open door policy on the station. So if you ever want to come through Thursday at noon and just hang out, looking at you, come see it.
Yeah. And man, the lights are literally like, get hooking us off the stage.
That's wrap it up, B.
Right. Like the music's starting to play.
Wrap it up.
But
do I look like I left a bad emotion?
So I'm excited because on October 19th, I'm going to guest on your guys' program. Know, and like, I'm really looking forward to doing that. Like continuing, like, I feel like the flip side of this, like the B side of this conversation, the reverse of it.
I'm going to be busy that week. So
we're not going to be as nice.
I'm just going to write down the questions you wrote and read those back.
Please,
to you
by all means, man. Perfect. I'll be like, oh, I know how to answer these. No, but that'll be fun because it's like, I'm sure you guys feel the same way. I'm behind the mic so much where I'm like leading the questions that I feel like I don't really get to do very often, like kind of the answering part.
Oh, this is fun. This is it's a blast.
It's cool to be able to like tell I think your side of the experience instead of just asking everyone else about their thing.
Because sometimes we try. That's something that like that was a critique early of like not a critique but advice of like make sure to put yourself in it.
Sure.
To figure out the balance of doing that while also trying to center the guests. So like not wanting to like sully the platform, but also not wanting to be removed from it. So figuring out that balance is difficult. So
yeah, because cool I think this, that this space. From listening to your guys' episodes, your personalities definitely come through.
For like, better or for worse.
No, absolutely for better. Like nobody wants to listen to a host that like they don't care about.
It's you always driven me crazy when people do, especially just interviews in general where they edit the interviewer out. And that's always driven. I know it's a style.
Then it's just the office.
That's driven me. That drives me nuts.
Yeah.
So yeah, you got to.
Yeah, like
if only it was the office.
Shout out to Jim and Pam.
I mean, look, like the office is great, but it's like, yeah, I like interviews where the interviews that I love listening to, like the host is like in the soup with it, you know?
Let's talk about The Office. I'm
kidding. Yeah. And so we're going to launch our collaborative
podcast
about The Office.
In the office.
Yeah. From the Cards Against Humanity offices.
We don't need any more niche podcasts. They get too specific.
Right? People are like, you know, you're 7 years late on this, right?
They're saying it's coming. Well, let's not go that way.
Yeah. Really?
That's the rumor that it could be coming back.
Who knows? Everything comes back.
Yeah.
But that's what's great about podcasting and about digital media, and that's why we need more young creators, because we don't need, listen, I grew up in the 90s. I love The X-Files, but I saw a trailer for season 11 of The X-Files today, and I'm like, look, 50% of me is like, oh, cool, warm, comfort food, nostalgia. 50% of me is like, let it die. Like, we don't need to, like, let things go on forever.
You
so
have
it's
the internet now. Like you can Google shit.
We got the internet. Yeah. It's the least scary thing going on.
You can't have secrets anymore.
But it's like it's great that there's people who are creating new things, who are constantly putting out new work into the world and into the community. And I know the Ergo is doing that. So I'm really glad we got to have you guys up
Thank
and start
so
this
much
conversation,
much
guys.
Excited to continue it and just talk about The Office for an hour.
Yeah. My interview is just going to be about The Office. Right on ergo.com.
ErgoRadio.com. ErgoRadio.com is like some sort of like ventilation system.
Sure. That makes sense.
He's Ergo Daniel on Twitter. Damon _AF. We're individual people as well.
Absolutely. Right.
Even though we don't tweet that much.
No, but you guys are there. And
But
you have more followers than me. Something's not right here.
ErgoRadio.com, where everyone can find all the resources. You guys make it very easy to find all the content there. I love it. Thank you guys both for coming up.
Thank you for having us.
Much appreciate
love
you.
To you
Absolutely.
You've been listening to a production of Dynasty Podcast. Find more Dynasty Podcasts at DynastyPodcast.com. For the Dynamic Dynasty, Dynasty Descend.